on today's Run to the Top podcast. Using race walk, run walk technique, over distance training, and as little as 3 days of running per week, I have proof, my own and those of the people who've been coached by me, that it's possible to qualify for Boston.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome, this is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. I am now in Mexico, and I wanted to talk to you just briefly about this because it is certainly changing some of the ways that I'm doing these podcasts, as well as it's really exciting being here. I'm about a half a day north of Mexico City, and we have different internet, we have different kinds of communication, so that's one of the challenges that I've been working on the last few weeks that I've been here. But I am really excited to be here, and I plan to be here the next 6 months or so. So I hope you will continue to join me on the podcasts, which are done around the world, and wonders of the internet and electronics and the digital world that we can do this from almost anywhere. So looking forward to several episodes in the next few months from Mexico, actually, and I'm getting better with my Spanish, too. On today's podcast, I'm going to talk a bit from my own running experience and as a run coach about qualifying for Boston using run walk. In other words, we're not just run walking to finish a race, we're actually running walking with a goal in mind, and I can help you understand how to make that happen. This is so exciting for me. I've done it myself. Some of my run clients and some of my run club have utilized this technique to qualify for Boston and other time requirement races. And I want to share the information with you, so you might want to try it yourself. One of the biggest benefits of run walk, beyond the initial just getting people into it and learning how to get out there and run farther, is that it keeps you from getting injured. This is one of the things that I encourage my runners to do if they're new runners or if they're trying to increase their distance. By utilizing run walk, we can do amazing things, and I have living proof, both my own and the people that I have coached, to be able to run fast, run well, and succeed at qualifying for something as hard as Boston. So as you all know, I'm host of Run to the Top podcast. I've also been running for almost 50 years. That's a long time. Lots of things have changed. I've also been coaching for almost that long, well over 3 decades, including my current run club that I work with on a regular basis called Go Wow Team. They're in the States, and of course I'm in Mexico, so everything we do right now with my input is from online. I also have national certifications as a nutritionist, a personal trainer, and run coaching, distance run coaching with Roadrunners Club of America, also known as RRCA, and U.S. Track and Field, USATF is what they're called, levels 1 and 2. First qualified for Boston in 1976. If my memory serves me correctly, there was only one qualifying time because, as a lot of you know, women weren't even allowed to run in Boston before I think it was 1968 was the first time that Catherine Switzer actually was allowed. I'm not sure of that date, but anyway, it was quite late into the previous century before women were even allowed to run in the Boston Marathon. And when they did start allowing women in to actually officially run it, there was only one qualifying time, and that was about 3:15, as I remember. My most recent qualifying time was in 2016, and I may try again in 2020. I don't run marathons every year. It's a great distance, but it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time, and it does do a lot of pounding on your body. Since I've been running more than 50 years, I do have to consider that pounding on my body. So as you know, in our podcast, every guest we have on board, we ask them the basic questions, and I'm going to go through those myself so you know a little bit more about me. I am currently 67 years old. I was born in California in a small town there called Placerville. I'm currently living in Pozos de Mineral in Mexico, about a half day's ride north of Mexico City, just to give you a sense of where it is. There are no beaches around here at all. Lots of hills and some little bit higher mountains. We're at about 7,000 feet. My favorite distance or type of race is currently exploring trails. I loved this when I was back in the States, and I'm also loving it here in Pozos. There's lots of trails to try out and check out, and except for some dogs periodically, it's great exploration. Lots of ruins around here, really quite an amazing and magical place. And second, that's a little more understandable for everybody, is half marathons. That is a distance that I really enjoy. Seems like half marathons, you can try really hard, you can improve, but you also can have other things going on in your life. So with that said, I want to talk to you about my own success and that of the runners that I have coached using the run-walk technique for marathon training, with not just finishing, but training with a qualifying race time in mind, as in Boston, where you have to qualify with an age-graded time in order to be able to run that race. Using race walk, run walk technique, over distance training, and as little as 3 days of running per week, I have proof, my own and those of the people who've been coached by me, that it's possible to qualify for Boston. So listen in. I am very excited about presenting this to you because I believe in it from my heart, as well as I have seen it work with the physiology and the psychology and all of the nutrition and stuff that's required. Just as a caveat for me, when I qualified for Boston in 2011, I beat the age qualifying time by 27 minutes. So that's over a minute per mile faster than the age requirement at that time. So I was really just well prepared, psyched, and had a great day. There's certainly strategy, luck, and technique in accomplishing this kind of goal. So I'm going to share as much of my experience as a coach and a runner so that you can understand how to do this yourself. And let's start with two kind of strategic points. One is to attempt your age qualifying goal at the youngest level of your age category if possible. This is definitely a strategy. And if you're young, like in your 20s, this may not apply so much, because by the time you get to be 30, a lot of times you have a little more experience with the whole nature of running longer distances, the psychology, the discipline that it takes to train for a marathon and all. But as you get older, the youngest level of your age category, of course, is always a fun one to move up into a new age category and then to try really hard. If you're planning ahead, if you've got everything working for you, then try to plan for those PRs, those qualifying times at the earliest age in your new age category. And then the second one, and this is important as well, is don't believe that if you were in the, for example, age 50 to 54 category instead of the age 30 to 34 category with a time that you just ran in a recent marathon, that in fact you would be able to qualify on that time if you were that much older. There is definite information that shows that people slow down. They lose muscle mass. They become less capable of running as fast. And you can ask any of the veteran runners who have been at it for a long time, you just reach a point where you can't go quite as fast. So I'm not saying that records aren't being broken all the time. And I'm also not going to say that there aren't age-related races where older people, and I'm really talking starting in, say, mid-30s, 40s, you know, masters-level race runners can do really, really well, better than younger people. But in general, don't use that as something where, oh, I'm 30 and I just ran a whatever for Boston, I didn't make it, but if I'd only been 50, I could have. Well, think about what that 50-year-old has to do in order to come up with those qualifying times to be able to qualify for something like Boston. I want to share a brief story of mine regarding run walk for Boston qualifying time in 2011. That was when I was turning 60, or I was 60 that year. And the previous year, in 2010, I had trained really hard. I was training with a friend who was trying to qualify for Boston. My goal was not so serious. I was just kind of getting back into the mode. But I trained really well. My training felt really strong. I ran a strong race a couple of weeks before the marathon. And so I felt like I was really well prepared. And then I got sick. I got major sick. And this is not an uncommon thing for people who push their bodies kind of to the limit. And that's what you're doing when you're trying to get a PR, when you're trying to qualify for something. And I was quite sick for several days. Well, it took everything out of me. And so when I got to the marathon race day, it became clear at about mile 10, certainly by half marathon, I was not going to reach even the Boston Marathon qualifying time, much less anything better than that. And it took a lot out of me just to make myself finish because I wasn't doing what I knew I was capable of. So many of us have dealt with that. And so I left that race feeling good that I had talked myself into finishing it, but not great at all about how I performed because I knew how much better I could do. And making this story short, the next year I trained hard. Everything was working for me. I didn't get sick, and maybe I had even learned from the year before not to push it quite as much. Whatever it was, on race day I was totally peaked, totally psyched, totally prepared physically and mentally, had worked out the nutrition and everything. And I ran that race like I never could have believed that I would be able to. The combined excitement of it, as well as the good training, got me to the finish line 27 minutes before the qualifying time for my age group, putting me really high in being able then to get into Boston. So I wanted you to know about that because I used run-walk training for both of those training periods, and I also used a different kind of training, race technique, race strategy on race day. I was not run-walking on race day. That day, everything that I had went into the race, but I will talk about that strategy by the time I get to the end of this call, because I feel like part of what I did so well was getting to the race day uninjured, totally psyched, by using a run-walk technique. There's also one other piece to it, and I will get into that in a little bit, but it's talking about over distance. This is one of the areas where I think it's been something I've used with my teams and with the people that I have coached, and it has served us very well. So let's start out with the basics of being able to run a Boston qualifying time. Number one, periodization. What I want you to do, what serious runners who, you know, we're just normal runners out here, but we have serious goals and we want to see how far we can push ourselves. Periodization is picking one or two peak races during a year where you go out and everything that you have put into your training, everything, every other race that you run during that period of time is geared toward your marathon peak or whatever your race peak is. But periodization is picking a limited number of races where you're actually going to put in 103%. And the other races that you're running, maybe you're putting in 99, maybe even 100%, especially in some of the shorter ones. But 103% is going into this one or two, very few peak races in the year. Extremely important as a means for having all of the pieces together for that goal. Pace essential for calculated race potential. I wrote this, I'm looking at my notes here. What I have found is I use a pace scheduler for anybody who wants to qualify for something that has a time qualification. So it could be that they just want to better their time in a 10K or something, but we're starting from a realistic pace that you've already got. So we determine your pace from either a former race. Let's say you ran a marathon in 4 hours. Okay, we have that as the basis for the training paces that you're going to be training from. This is not just some kind of helter-skelter kind of thing you get out there and you put in miles, you get a training plan off of the internet and you just go out there and you run. It's not like that. It's using information from previous running and specifically previous races, marathons if possible, half marathons, whatever your longest race is or most recent race that you've done well in, but also it has to be relatively recent. And we look at your pace and we look at what's realistic for you. I have a copy of these pace charts and I would like to offer them to you. I'm going to make this offer at the end of the talk. I'll also say now that if you want to email me, my email is stephaniek@gowowliving.com. And what you can do is just email me and I will send you a pace chart. I'll talk about this a bit more at the end. So we're determining your pace, your realistic pace from former race results, and I'm going to go through a couple here to give you an example. We're going to start off with a fast one, and then we're going to go to a much slower one. So I'm not talking about elite runners here. I'm starting off with a person who can run a 2-mile race at 7:08 per mile. If you're faster than that, my pace charts aren't going to work for you specifically, but you certainly can look stuff up online too. So I have a column here. So this person who can race a 2-mile race in 14:16, 7:08 per mile, is statistically going to run a marathon. Now listen to this, because this is really interesting stuff. In 3 hours, 43 minutes, and 57 seconds. That's an 8:32 per minute mile. So a couple of points here. Look at the difference between the 2-mile race time and the marathon race time. This is really important for you to understand. If you're not able to run that 7:08 for 2 miles, then we're going to work with you on getting your speed up. But if you're way out there and running 2 miles at, let's say, 8:30, there's no way that you're going to be able to run 26 of those at 8:30. It just doesn't work that way. Everybody knows that. So that's an example for you of pace chart. I'm also looking on this same column, and this person ran a half marathon. This is a statistical person, so this is not just one person. They ran a half marathon in 1:46:40. That's 8:08 per mile. Go down one more to a half marathon, 8:32 per mile for a full marathon. Isn't that cool? So those are realistic training paces that we can start using for you and utilizing in figuring out your workouts for every week. And that part of it is actually really cool too. Okay, so I'm going to go to that other training chart. Let's see if I can find it here. This person runs a 2-mile race and this is going the other end, right? This person runs a 2-mile race at 11:54 per mile. Now, I know a lot of us are in that range. So this is nothing that we can't work for getting a good marathon time. It might not be good enough for Boston, but that's what we can check from this pace calculator. So we've got a person who runs 11:54 for a 2-mile race. Let's come down to a marathon. This person is going to be running statistically a 6-hour, 13-minute, and 37-second marathon. Now, that's not going to get you into Boston. Let me explain what's going on here. That doesn't mean that Boston is out of your scope, but what it does mean is that you need to work on starting to get stronger in some of these distances so that it is realistic for you to train for a marathon and qualify for Boston. Finishing Boston, is one thing. I know there are charity races, so you can get into it, and that may be the experience that you're happy with. But if you're actually trying to qualify, then we need to move your time down on a 2-mile race, on a 10-kilometer race, on possibly a half marathon race, which would be a great training one, and put a few of those in your training period. And then your marathon is much more realistic. Does that make sense? I hope that does. And when you actually send for this training pace chart, it will be more visible to you. And of course, that's going to help you to understand how it all fits together. So now let's see, I'm going to open up a couple of other, back to my notes on qualifying for Boston. So the first thing is that you and I, if I'm working with you, or you and whoever you're working with, has to be realistic about your pace and the potential for qualifying for Boston. Very easy to do statistically. This is not some just throw it out there and see if you can qualify, which of course was where I was when I first started running, and I'm sure a lot of you are. But we can actually figure ahead of time a range that would say, yes, you might be able to make it this time. Let's work within that pace range and see if we can get you there. Now, in the training program that I've been using for several years now, and I also used for myself, I only did 3 runs per week, which, you know, that's really awesome. If you're a busy person and you only have to put in 3 runs per week, wow, that makes things so much easier. So that's not to say that you don't do anything the rest of the days. You definitely have to do things. And I'm going to go through a sample couple of weeks for you so you see what the sample training is like, but 3 runs per week, very, very doable. Rest is absolutely essential, and you've got to listen to your body. If you're upping your mileage, if you're increasing your pace, if you're doing all of this stuff to push yourself to be able to do this marathon, you've got to listen to your body, and you've got to include rest. In the training that I advocate for my people that I'm coaching, we definitely say rest if you need it. If you don't need the rest because you're feeling pretty strong, then you can do some kind of cross training. So there are definitely options besides just sitting around wondering why you're not running and fretting about it. Cross training really is essential, though. It's not good to run every day. If you were an elite athlete, that might be what you would do 6 days a week. But most of us are not elite athletes. We don't have the time, we don't have the ability, and we need to take rests in there. And we also need to cross train, because elite athletes, as you know, they cross train. They just have more time for a lot of the stuff than we do. So cross training is essential, and cross training can include lots of different things. Should include some strength training, should include possibly some swimming, some stretching, some things like that. But generally speaking, you do want to be getting your heart rate up fairly high, probably 6 days a week. And that would be accomplished with the cross training. Eating well is a huge factor. I know when I practiced with my nutrition for one of the marathons I was running and started adding more protein before, during, and after my training runs, I did way, way better. And that was something that I hadn't realized. The other thing that I added in, which was, again, another huge, like, wow, realization, was salt. I added way more salt into my diet than I thought I was supposed to have in my diet, because I eat very pure, and there's very little salt in the food that I get. And in general, when you hear that Americans eat too much salt, it's because we eat too much processed food. Over distance is what I call my coaching ace in the hole. What do I mean by that? I mean that, and I'm going to go over this in the sample weeks that are coming up right after this part, over distance up, you are going to be putting in up to 26 miles of training. Almost nobody does this in one fell swoop, in one workout, but what is it that says, because you've run 20 miles, you can run 26 miles? You know, that makes no sense to me. So what we do as a compromise, because obviously that extra 6 miles on your long run, or 24 miles or 22 miles, we compromise that to you're putting in those miles, but you're not worrying about your speed. So you're getting your body used to what it feels like to cover 26 miles, but you're not doing it at a pace that's going to beat you up. And it does amazing things. I have seen groups of my my coaching groups, my running groups, so they're not all following my running plan. And I have seen over and over that the people who participate in the long, long runs, the endurance, you know, beyond endurance runs for marathons, they have the mental strength to keep going at mile 20. They know something about how they're going to feel past that mile. They know something about hydrating and nourishment over that 20 mile. And it has worked very well, as well as this is what I did. And I placed really well using this type of training. So over distance. And let's go over a couple of sample weeks. These are toward the end of the training period because they do include over distance. But let me go through these. This is from an 18-week training program, and we're in week 13. We've got five to go, and we are going to rest on Monday. I do Monday rests. Of course, all of this is up to figuring for the person what their schedule is like, but we do, my run group does our long runs on Sunday, so Monday is our rest day. Tuesday, we have strength and core training for an hour minimum. Wednesday, we have a track workout, and here's the sample track workout. It's 1 mile warm-up, 10 times 400 meters with a 400 meter running or moving increment. So you're moving the whole time, but that recovery of 400 meters is after running a fast 400. There are 10 of those, and then a 10-minute cool down and then stretching. On Thursday, we've got a rest. This is close to the end of our training period, so there's two rest days in here. If you're strong enough and you can handle some kind of cross training on this Thursday, have at it. But you know, if you're doing a hard track workout, then there's a good chance that you need that recovery on Thursday. Then on Friday, we've got a 1 mile easy warm up and then 10 miles at planned marathon pace. And that planned marathon pace is going to be the pace that we've determined from going through my pace chart. So you may be that you're going to try to run your marathon in 10 minute miles, for example. Okay, so your planned marathon pace is 10 minutes per mile. And so we've got you out there. You're going to be doing 1 mile easy, and then you're doing 10 miles at a 10 minute per mile pace. Okay, on Saturday, we've got you 30 to 60 minutes of strength and core training or rest. If you're really feeling fatigued and you're not able to recover, then rest that body. Don't let it get to a point where you feel you have to get out there and do a workout or do strength training or core training to the point where you do yourself in. But as you know, strength and core training doesn't have to raise your heart rate, so that might be a way to rest and also, this is how I look at it, be able to get stronger for an overall running capability. Now, on Sunday, we do our long runs in my group, and so we are running 15 miles at our planned marathon pace plus 10 seconds. That means that you're averaging 10 minutes plus 10, so 10 per mile for 15 miles. Very doable. By this time, you're actually very much into these different paces. This 10 plus 10 means that you're running a little slower than your marathon pace, but you're putting in the mileage. It's very protective. It's very guarded in the way that we do it. And when you follow through with this, your chances of succeeding are really, really high. Okay, let's go to the fourth week before your race. So we're at week 14 weeks done, four more to go. Okay, Monday rest. Always for my groups, Monday rest. You, of course, can change that if you do your long runs on Saturdays, which is not an uncommon thing. Then Sunday would probably be the rest, and then we'd kind of revise the rest of this to fit into your workday. Tuesday, strength and core training for an hour minimum. You're rested. You want to put in a hard strength and core training workout. Then Wednesday, we've got a track workout, 1 mile warm up, 5 times 2 minutes fast. So you're running for 2 minutes and you're running as fast as you can. Some of you are going to make it around the track once. Some of you are going to make it around the track almost twice. Then you're going to run easy for 2 minutes. So you're continually going, but you're doing this with fast, slower recovery time. That's what the 5 minutes times 2 minutes fast and then 2 minutes easy. That's how that one works. And then there's a 10-minute cool down. So you're jogging, you're walking, whatever, but you're continuing to move during that cool down, 10 minutes, and then you're stretching. Thursday, we have a rest or flexibility workout. So some kind of non-cardio workout, but working on your body, getting it flexible, getting it to stay uninjured is really so much of what this is about. Friday, we have 1 mile easy and 7 miles at your planned marathon pace. As you can see, we're already kind of changing the mileage amounts around, but you'll see what's coming up next. So on Saturday, we have a 30 to 60 minute strength and core training, or if you're too fatigued, you're going to rest. Then on Sunday, I have you running 20 miles at your planned marathon pace plus 15 seconds. So in this person that we've designated as a 10 minute per mile marathon race day pace, they're running 10:15 per mile and then 6 more miles at any pace, including walking, to include a full 26 miles. That can take people a lot of the day. But the psychology for how they feel after that is just amazing because they've worked through all of the hassles of getting through 26 miles. There's logistics where there's an incredible amount of time that needs to be put into it. There's nutrition. And they're also then, when you finish 26 miles at whatever pace is needed to do that last 6 miles, then you've already run a marathon. The way people feel about it is just amazing. And then you've got 4 more weeks to taper and to get strong and get psyched. And it is an amazing training program. And because we're using run walk for all of this, I didn't go into the detail of that. But what you're going to be doing is you're going to be walking, most of you, 1 minute for every 9 minutes of running. So that's a 10-minute total. What we're having to do is we're having to balance out the 9 minutes of running a little bit faster so that each 10-minute increment equals 10:15, that planned marathon pace that you were talking about. So it sounds a little complicated. Certainly over the internet, it's a little complicated hearing it. But when you look at it on paper, you figure out what your pace is, you start running with this run-walk technique, it works out amazingly. And I used this when I beat the marathon qualifying time by 27 minutes. I ran for 9 minutes, walked for 1 minute, and did that for my whole training plan with staying within these pace guidelines that allowed me to both know that I could do the pace, know that I could run even a little faster because there was an averaging out from running 9 and walking 1, and the confidence that I had actually put in 26 miles before race day. So I'm going back to actually running your race, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the strategy here of that, because generally people start tapering at about 2 weeks before. That makes a lot of sense with the marathon. I'm sure any of you who have already trained for a marathon, and that's who I'm addressing today. I'm addressing intermediate runners, people who want to improve, people who want to see how far they can push themselves for a marathon, and if the fates are with you, and you have the ability to be able to qualify for Boston on your own without having to find another way to actually get to Boston. So that taper time during that last 2 weeks, you are definitely going to be lessening your miles. You're still going to be running some fast stuff, but you're lowering your miles dramatically. And that's all included in the training plan that we use. It is pretty much the same type of taper as almost any other training plan. We're not doing any more over distance. We are using run walk still because we're trying to keep ourselves strong. We're also using having some strength track and tempo workouts in there because we're working on trying to keep all of these pieces together to be able to make you as well prepared as possible. And then on race day, and this I really want to get into because people think, oh, there is no way I could run walk on race day. And I agree with you. What you want to do is on race day, if everything has done, if you've done well with your training and you're really finding that the paces that you've worked at are working for you, then on race day, the only time that you are going to walk is when you walk through the aid stations to get water or when you, maybe you have a timer on. I've used this in the past where I have a timer on that reminds me every 10 minutes. Do I need to drink? Do I need to eat? It's not like I have to stop. But if I do stop to drink, I'm going to keep walking while I'm drinking. That's my walking portion for the run walk. Other than that, I'm going to run as much of that damn race as I can because I want to have the best time that I possibly can. Couple of words of wisdom, and we all know this, any of us who've raced, is watch your pace in the beginning. Don't go out so fast that you burn yourself up. Much better to get halfway through the race or even at mile 20, which is what happened to me in my last marathon. I got to mile 20 and I had been running a steady pace, but nothing to call home about. And I knew I could do the last 6 miles. I was feeling strong. I had good nutrition. I was hydrated. The temperature was working for me. My feet didn't hurt. And I picked up my pace on that last 6 miles. And do you know how good that feels? Any of you who've had that experience, you know that is really wonderful. Okay, one more thing. And this is more of a general how to run a race. I talked about this in the introduction podcast when Jeff Godet interviewed me, but I think it's really important for our most important races like this marathon that you've trained for 18 weeks for, you've trained to peak for it, it's everything that you are really putting your effort into, your motivation and your time. Set 3 goals. So your highest goal is the exceptional race based on exceptional training and the excitement of the day. It may be even better than your qualifying time for Boston. And that's what happened to me in 2011. I was running by the half marathon. I knew I was running so much stronger than I needed to run for the qualifying time that I wanted, that I ran the pace that I knew I was capable of for the last 13, and it worked really well. And it was within my training. I just didn't want to over expect results. And so that was great. That was like the perfect race for me. Really, just everything came together. But goal number two, and this is kind of the way that it ended for me in 2016, is to finish to qualify. So stay focused on the race. Don't go out too fast. Check yourself at various points along the way and see how you're feeling. Are you feeling strong or are you just kind of feeling like, you know, this is going to be something to get through, but you've trained hard. There's nothing that's really holding you back. It's just not one of those days where all the pieces come together and you feel like you're flying. Then stay focused. Do that goal that you've set, finish to qualify for Boston. Wonderful, wonderful option. And what wonderful success to make that happen. And then goal number three is to cross that finish line because you succeed just by getting there. Time is secondary. You ran a marathon and sometimes that is more than enough to be exceptionally proud of. I went through that mind game in the 2010 marathon where I was at 13.1, knowing there was no way I was going to run what I was capable of because the fates hadn't worked for me. and instead saying, okay, you can finish this thing because you have trained really hard. You know it's only 26.2 miles and you have already done that in your training. Get out there, cross the finish line, feel good about what you did accomplish instead of thinking what you can do and try for in another year. I would like to offer you again that free pace chart if you want to learn more about how to train with paces, and email me at stephaniek@gowowliving.com. Give me your best marathon time that's happened in the last couple of years, and I will send you a pace chart and show you where your time should be so that you can see if it's realistic for you to think you can qualify for Boston at this point in your life. Of course you can qualify for Boston. If it's a really high goal and you want it, you can qualify. You know, there's just lots of ways to make that happen, but it's not going to happen just by wishing, and it's also not going to happen just by kind of throwing it out there in the heavens and saying, I want this. So that free pace chart, and then we are going to change gears here and move into the final kick. And of course, I usually am interviewing other people, and so they share their answers with me. But for me, I went through this ahead of time, and I am going to share with you one of my favorite local training runs. And today I'm going to talk about the Marin Headlands in Marin County. Great place to run. There's a really easy run down to the beach. You can also go up into the hills and run all the way along the coast. Amazing runs there. Tam Valley is the general area where you would drive. Tennessee Valley Trailhead. There's a beautiful run that takes you down to Tennessee Valley Beach, and it's maybe a mile and a half or 2 miles, so it's really easy, and you can take your family there if you want to walk it. You can run it as an easy trail run. It's relatively flat, a little bit down to the beach and then a little bit up on the way back, but very doable. Then you can also run up in the hills all over the place there, and you can run 5 miles, 10 miles, 100 miles, you know, literally they do a lot of the long ultra runs out there. So I would highly recommend the Marin Headlands if you get to the Bay Area and have a chance to get over to Marin County and Tennessee Valley Trailhead. They have bathrooms, no charge for parking there, really nice place. Favorite or recommended running book? I would like to recommend the book by Catherine Switzer, who has been interviewed on this podcast and who was the first woman to officially run the Boston Marathon. Her book is titled Marathon Woman. It's a great read. It's full of running history. And of course, I'm very proud of her, all that she accomplished. And it's good to know the history of both the Boston Marathon and also the history of women in running and in the history of running in general. It's quite a fascinating, well, we're all runners. We love running. We love reading about it. We love hearing about it. Amazing how you can never get bored by running if you're a runner. And word of wisdom or advice or humor, I want to suggest to you, because I have gotten better at this myself, and I also talk to all of the people that I come in contact with as a coach, listen to your body. The longer you run, the more this applies. So, you know, new runners get out there, and of course they need to listen to their body. I think they usually are a little more willing to ask questions. That's what I have seen anyway, that they're willing to say, this hurts me here. What's the deal? And sometimes it's just, you know, working out a little harder. Your muscles are getting stronger. Other times it is, in fact, plantar fasciitis, tendonitis, IT band problems, those kind of things that are so common. So don't just run through those. As any of us know who've been at this for a while, you run through those things and you can pay for it big time. So, you know, get some attention, talk to people about it, lay low, ice, all of those kind of common sense things that will give you running for the rest of your life. And this whole run-walk technique that I'm talking about is, as I see it, a way to allow you to run hard, to run well, to run fast, but also to give your body a regular rest, literally every 10 minutes, every 2 minutes, every 5 minutes, however those increments fit in there, but you are only running for, say, 9 minutes. That's my standard for my intermediate runners. Running for 9 minutes, and then you get a 1 minute break. It's amazing what it does for your body to keep it from being injured. And it's amazing psychologically how much farther you can run when you know that break is coming up every 10 minutes or even sooner if you decide on a different pace turnover. If you have someone or some subject about running that you would like to listen to in a future podcast, please let me know by posting on our Facebook page at runnersconnect.net/FB. Usually I ask my guests if they have someone they'd like to hear about, and so today I'm asking you. And let us know on our Facebook page. That's a great place to make comments. If you would like me to send you the pace chart that I use in my coaching, send me an email to Stephanie K. That's Stephanie, StephanieKaye, at living.com. Stephanie K. at gowowliving.com. Include your best marathon time within the last 2 years, and I will send you back a pace chart that gives you that breakdown that I talked to you about a little earlier today. So I want to thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top, and I hope you see that there are ways to use run walk to get to your Boston qualification. Is that cool or what? I just think it's amazing. And please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every week when the new episode is published. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top, and have a great one.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.